We are the Bros Who Think Media Network, and you're listening to our sports show, Prime Time.
Hello, and welcome to the Bros Who Think podcast, Prime Time Special. This is our World Cup finale preview. I know we did one before the World Cup started, and now after so many weeks, we're here down to the finale. And you know how I say, fans, when I don't know something, I go get the best people who know. And today, not only do we have Steve Davis returning from the commentator from FC Dallas and ESPN Radio, but starting off first, we have Jason Davis from the from Sirius XM channel 157, the soccer channel. But I'll let Jason tell you a little bit more about what he does. How you doing, Jason?
I'm doing good, man. I didn't know you were doing double Davis. That's an awful lot of Davis on your show.
Yeah. I just realized it when you said it.
Steve is good people, though. Yeah, we're not related, but Steve is good people. I do a United States of Soccer show on Sirius XM FC 157, as you said, Lyndon. Monday through Friday, 12 to 2 p.m. Eastern time. It's it's me talking about American soccer topics, taking phone calls, diving into all kinds of different stuff.
Awesome. Well, glad to have you and your expertise here to talk about the World Cup, because what a great World Cup it was. Before we get to the finale, I just want to get some of your thoughts on, was this an exciting World Cup? Do you think you enjoyed it? And do you think the fans got a good World Cup out of it as well?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think this was a World Cup that gave us quite a few surprises. I mean, It's been quite a month, so my brain is swimming with all of the stuff we've seen. So I can't, I'd have to think about it real hard to make sure I could go back and hit every single big moment from this World Cup. But we did, we got surprises, and we've got, we had the defending champions go out at the group stage. We had Spain falling to Russia on penalties. We had, we had Brazil and their shenanigans ultimately losing to Belgium. We had obviously, the question of whether or not Mexico could make it into the quarterfinals. They didn't. And I'll leave my biases against Mexico aside for the moment. But there were a lot of things in this tournament. And I mean, big performances. Sorry, my voice going out. Big performances by a lot of big players as well.
Yeah. I mean, from whether that's Cristiano Ronaldo, we see the rise of Mbappe with France. A lot of big stuff happened in this World Cup. And I think we saw a lot. I think, yes, we didn't see the big name a la the Brazil, the Germany that we're used to, but right, we got to see newcomers. We got to see England back in the fold. We got to see Belgium. We get to see the young nation of Croatia and their golden generation make it to the finals. This is so exciting. So first, I want to start off with the games that led up to the finals. I want to start off with the France versus Belgium match and the Croatia versus England match, and I want to start off with France versus Belgium. What were your thoughts of that game in particular? Why did France win, and why are they going to the finals and not Belgium?
Well, okay, so France won because France does well is slow teams down like Belgium. I mean, they've got as much talent as France has, and you can talk about Kylian Mbappe. You can obviously talk about Antoine Griezmann. We know about Olivier Giroud, maybe not the best striker in the world, but certainly elite level playing at Chelsea now after all those years with Arsenal. You've got incredible talent. Paul Pogba deserves a mention. Those guys can go get the goals, but the strength of France is really N'Golo Kanté in the midfield, Pogba supporting him. You can throw in a Matuidi as well. These guys are incredible game managers. I mean, it's a way of we call quarterbacks game management guys sometimes, and it's a slight. I don't think that's a slight at all in this game, in this sport. N'Golo Kanté is the best in the world at what he does, and it allows for France to sort of just always be in control. They may not go and wow you with throwing numbers forward and creating all sorts of intricate passing moves, but what they'll do is they'll slow you down, and then when they get the opportunity, they'll destroy you on a counterattack. Now, that didn't happen against Belgium. They just needed one goal, and they got it from an unlikely source in Samuel Umtiti on a set piece, but they're good at that too, and the service was perfect there. They're just very efficient. They're very smart about the way they go about their business, and while, again, from an entertainment perspective, we might want France to be a little different sometimes, you really can't slight what Didier Deschamps has done because they're in a final.
Yeah, and they've produced greatness. I know you want to see two goals, three goals. You want to see more attacking from Griezmann, Pogba, and Mbappe. But what they're doing is winning football. They're winning games, and like you said, they're in the World Cup final right now because of their great game management.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And Belgium, you know, I don't think Belgium was bad on the day in that semifinal against France. I mean, I think that, you know, Roberto Martinez stuck. Both these teams tried to do what had gotten them there, right? They stuck to their game.
Their guns.
They didn't really mess around with, okay, we're going to, you know, Roberto Martinez did make an interesting decision by starting Moussa Dembélé. I think some people were surprised at that. You could argue that a player like Fellaini isn't the most dynamic player getting forward. He's great on set pieces and he's smart in midfield, but he's not necessarily going to be the player that makes goals out of nothing. And so there were some other options that I suppose Martinez could have gone with, but they were, you know, they were open. They were trying to score goals. If Kevin De Bruyne has a slightly better day, or somebody can take advantage of what Eden Hazard did because he was excellent, then we're probably talking about Belgium winning something like 2-1.
100%. And I think it comes down to De Bruyne just being a little bit more on target, and maybe one of those shots would have went in, or if Lukaku would have took some of the chances that Eden Hazard was creating, if he wasn't missing some of those balls, we might be talking about a different final right now.
Yeah, I mean, look, again, Hazard was great. De Bruyne wasn't great. Lukaku was a little disappointing. I mean, here's the thing, though. And again, you can't just take in isolation and say Lukaku was bad or not good or whatever words you want to use to describe his performance, because he was excellent in the rest of the tournament.
Yeah.
You also have to talk about what Varane and Umtiti did, and obviously N'Golo Kanté, because if you're forced wide, if you don't have the ability to sort of play through the middle, if you're not getting the ball to Lukaku in those spaces, if he's not able to play back to goal and bring in, you know, some of those wing options, whether it's De Bruyne or Hazard for Belgium, then he's going to be less effective. And they did a really good job of limiting Romelu Lukaku's ability to impact the game, because those center backs stuck to him and they made sure that service wasn't dangerous.
100%. Well, looking at the other game that got to the finals, we got the Young Boys of England, is like I like to call them, the Young England team, versus the experienced golden generation of Croatia. This one I watched with anticipation. I watched the whole time, and I was a guy who was pulling for Croatia the whole time, but I kind of got uptaken by the England story with the media was presenting, and I really loved the story of the young English guy, so I didn't really care who won this game. It was a great game, came down to the finish. England came up a little short. What was your thoughts on this game? Do you think that football is back in England, even though they lost? And what is your thoughts on the golden generation of Croatia coming through? Luka Modric being one of the best midfielders Rakitic as well. Rakitic. And then Mandzukic making the game-winning goal.
Yeah, look, you know, the thing about Croatia is that we knew they had quality players in a lot of places on the field. I think that they are man for man not as talented as some of the other teams that we you know, expected to make some noise in this tournament. But again, this is the World Cup of surprises, and it shows you, you know, when you talk about the way things went for Germany, or the fact that Spain got knocked out by Russia, because again, Croatia would have been playing Spain in that quarterfinal if not for Russia prevailing on penalty kicks the way they did against Spain, and Spain not being sharp enough in front of goal. I mean, that's essentially what it was for them. It's deserved for Croatia because they beat the teams in front of them. Luka Modric is immense, maybe the best central midfielder in the world. Just, you know, so smart with the ball, plays space so well. You don't see him put a teammate in a position to have to struggle to receive a pass. Those passes are always in the right spot, whether to keep momentum going forward or into space where the player can receive the ball without being pressured into a turnover. I mean, those are little things. Sometimes we fail to connect the dots when we watch a game or watch a game back even, and we say, oh, you know, number eight turned the ball over. But if you look at the play, you go, well, we go back two passes, and the pass that number eight received was, you know, it was out of his reach, or it was slightly off, or he had to turn X, Y, or, you know, he had to turn X or Y direction in order to recover, and that created the pressure, or he was forced to scramble to play a pass because it was put in the wrong position. And that's Luka Modric makes sure that doesn't happen when he's on the ball for Croatia. And they have enough danger. I wonder about goals in this game, but they had enough danger up front with Perisic and Mandzukic, who took their opportunities well to get the goals. And they were better than England. I mean, they were. I don't know what happened with England. And, you know, maybe we had ticked up our expectations for the Three Lions because of the way that they had performed in the tournament beforehand. And reasonably so. I mean, it was good to see England actually have some fun. And I've always had this weird love-hate relationship with the English national team. I don't root for them. I get annoyed when we hear so much about this team before they do anything in a tournament. I think the media is just ridiculous at most points. And so I'm usually kind of like, okay, you know, whatever, England. And they think that they're God's gift to the game. And yeah, okay, maybe the sport was codified in England 150 years ago, but it's been perfected in other places. I've always kind of been like, ah, England, whatever, I don't need them. And I'm kind of laughing at their failure most of the time. I found myself liking the team and liking Gareth Southgate and liking the attitude for the most part. Even the it's coming home thing.
Linden, yeah, they found a good way to flip it.
Yeah, they did. They did. They made that thing a bit of expression of joy. And, you know, I think very few people in England were saying, hey, we're definitely bringing a World Cup trophy back to England. It was more like we get to have some fun with our team again for the first time in maybe 20 years. So let's own that. Let's just have some fun with this. We know it's ridiculous. We know that even if we do win a World Cup, I mean, a lot of that's going to be because of lucky breaks and the way that things played out for them. I mean, you look at the teams that England had to beat to get here. They didn't play anybody of a elevated stature. They played Colombia and beat them on penalties without James Rodriguez. You know, they beat Sweden, not necessarily the brightest attacking team in the tournament. So there were lots of reasons to think that England's run to a semifinal wasn't necessarily one dripping with
steep competition.
Yeah, it wasn't as though this was something that you would write in the annals of English football. We knocked off Brazil and we beat Spain and we beat Germany. It wasn't like that. So at the same time, though, again, they beat who was in front of them, and they had an opportunity here. So I'm happy for England. I think that for the most part, they're handling their loss well. Interesting thing. And again, now we get to see Luka Modric and Ivan Rakitic and Perisic and Mandzukic and Subasic, who I thought was going to be done for the tournament when he went down against Russia. We're going to get to see them play in a final against a France team that, again, is incredibly France is very confident of what they are and how they want to play. And I think they're going to win the game, but it should be fun.
Word. Well, speaking of the matchup between France and Croatia, I want to go there since you set it up. What are some of the keys for both Croatia to win? Let's start off with Croatia. What are some of the keys that they have to do against the France stars? And what is something that France has to do against the well-balanced team of Luka Modric, Rakitic, Subotic, and Mandzukic?
Well, I think everything. If you're even a little soccer nerdy, everything is about the midfield in this game. Everything is Kante and Modric. I mean, it's not just those two players. But you're going to see those two players have a significant impact on this game. If Kante is better, then France wins. If Modric can find a way to elude Kante, to find those passing lanes, to get Perisic into space, or find Mandzukic in behind or cutting inside, then those things, you know, maybe Croatia finds a goal. As always, I look at goalkeepers. I think they're always huge in moments like this because these teams are good enough that they're going to create chances and they're going to get shots. And Hugo Lloris has been really good in this tournament for France. I mean, again, Subasic was good for Croatia as well, but I just think that maybe Lloris is a slight advantage for France just in terms of his confidence level. And you know, this game is going to be tight. Neither one of these teams is known to go and drop a bunch of goals on you. So if we end up, I mean, in this tournament especially, if we end up with something like a 1-1 after 90 minutes, well, okay, now we're talking about fatigue and we're talking about some of that, something we thought would impact Croatia in that game against England, and turned out, you know, they had an extra reservoir of energy. I don't know from where after playing two matches to penalty kicks in 120 minutes in each of those. I heard a stat yesterday during the broadcast for Croatia and England. Croatia has basically played an extra game in this tournament.
Jesus.
because of those penalty the extra time of the penalty shootouts. So, you know, you expect that to be an issue, but again, I don't know. I mean maybe we throw that out just because of them outlasting England. I mean, France is a different level. You have leveled up here going to take on France instead of England. I think it's Modric, it's Conte, it's obviously Croatia making sure that they can handle Mbappe and not letting him get into space or get in behind. There's those two center backs for Croatia have been immense. And I got some stick on Twitter yesterday because in the first 15 minutes, I thought Dejan Lovren was, if not bad, he was sort of out of control.
I agree.
I thought he was going to get himself sent off. I said something like, oh, we're all surprised that Dejan Lovren's having a shocker. Now, he got a lot better. And the fact that he didn't pick up a yellow card or didn't get sent off is obviously to the benefit of Croatia because he was excellent. And Vida, who I think is, he always seems a little out of control to me. Like, it always seems like he's a slight, like half a step away from a horror tackle and getting sent off or sliding in and completely missing and whiffing on his mark, which would mean, you know, Mbappe for France is now in on goal. So that's the kind of thing that obviously Croatia has to avoid if they're going to have any chance in this game. I wonder about France and pushing their fullbacks and how that's going to play out on the other side as well. Because, again, France is a little bit more conservative than we might expect them to be. And it's been Pavard and Hernandez. And Pavard's got a great goal in this tournament. He could be an X factor sort of coming up the right-hand side, especially if you get Mbappe cutting in off of him. So there's a couple of things there.
100%. In American media, if you look at sports like basketball or football, when we ask the question always of who's the X factor, who's the guy that can determine whether or not these games are won. And in soccer, you look at it's more of a team sport than anything. But I have to ask you nonetheless, who do you feel is the X factor both of France and of Croatia?
Well, so you're asking me, Lynn, are you putting me on the spot to pick somebody that we're not all talking about already? Because again,
yeah, pretty much.
Okay, Mbappe is obviously going to be a major factor for France. I mean, that doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that one out. Again, I'll come back to somebody like Pavard or Hernandez has been good defensively, but not necessarily as important up the field for France as Pavard on the other side, or is not as adventurous, I would say for France on the other side. And I guess it wouldn't be right of me to pick somebody like Paul Pogba. And here's the thing about Pogba. He takes a lot of criticism. He takes a lot of heat. I have my personal beliefs as to why that is, because I think most of the time he's excellent, and this sport because we're not always stat driven, it becomes very difficult to kind of be sure. You know, if Randy Moss catches 100 balls in a year, you know Randy Moss had a good year. It's a little different for a midfield player like Paul Pogba, who's not going to pop up with 25 goals. So,
yeah.
But I think this is the game where Paul Pogba, in addition to doing what Deschamps wants him to do in midfield to support Conte, to be the two-way force, both defensively and in the attack, I think this is the game where Pogba steps up and probably has, you know, a goal or an incredible assist or does something. I mean, he's had a couple moments, jaw-dropping moments in this tournament that just, I think they slip by people because maybe they don't end up in goals for France because he's making a pass and his teammate doesn't finish or some space closes quickly because of the opposing defense. He's just, he's brilliant. I love Paul Pogba. I think he's, again, maybe not right to pick a $100 million player, a $100 million player as an X factor, but he might be that guy. And go ahead.
No, I was going to say 100%. I agree with you. Paul Pogba, even though he's one of the stars on this team, he's the guy that when he's rolling, this France team is really hard to beat.
Yeah. You know, I think for Croatia, you imagine that if they find a goal, it might be a set piece or it could be something, some bit of magic from Modric, certainly connecting with one of the guys that scored against England. But I'm going to say defensively. I mean, Lovren, again, I'm not just picking on Dejan Lovren, but he is prone to a mistake every now and then. He is prone to his concentration lapsing. And I pointed out Vita and Lovren and how good they've been. This is a different task for them against France. So I wonder if maybe it's one of those guys who's the X factor, because if they can, if Lovren and Vita can handle Giroud, then that makes things a lot easier for Croatia. But if Lovren and or Vita has a mistake at the back, a simple slip, that's the kind of thing that now you're down to France. And because of Conte and because of Matuidi and because of Pogba and because of those center backs who have been playing so well, it's going to be really hard for Croatia to find a goal.
100%. I have a question concerning Antoine Griezmann. Do you think France can win this World Cup final without Antoine Griezmann getting a goal?
Wow. I think it's very possible. Yeah. I mean, we know that Griezmann is a major part of the France attack, but he is just one piece of a bigger team picture for France. And, you know, we come into a tournament, I think it's natural for us as fans to come into a tournament thinking, okay, this is going to be the tournament of Messi. This is going to be the tournament of Ronaldo. This is going to be the tournament of Griezmann. This is going to be the tournament of name your world-class player. Salah, for example. I mean, obviously, we didn't expect Egypt to win the World Cup, but we thought Salah would have a bigger impact for his national team than he did. And then what we find out is that the World Cup in international football, as much as an individual player can have an impact, if you're going to win games, it's about the team ideal. It's about the cohesive cooperation between, because the more organized you are, the bigger your advantage in the World Cup, because these teams don't have so much time to drill and work on every little minute detail the way that club teams do. If you can buy into an idea, if you know who you are, and this is why France hasn't deviated. This is why Deschamps hasn't said, okay, we're just going to go for it now. There's no reason to go for it, because the thing that they are best at, that they are most comfortable doing, the thing that won't allow them to get caught out and end up having to chase a game, is playing a little bit more conservative, sitting back, waiting for the counterattack to happen for them, because they have those options in Mbappe and Griezmann. And you know, so I think they absolutely can, because we just witnessed them do it in the semifinal against Belgium. They got a set piece goal from Samuel Umtiti. That is not how you would expect France to win, and yet here they are.
100%. And I agree with everything you said. In soccer, it's more about the team. In international play, it's more about the team coming together and winning this, more than the club play, where whether one individual can take a team over the top. I want to ask you, before we get into our final picks, just the third place game. Give us some of your quick thoughts before we get you out with your final picks. And what do you think? Do you think England can bring home that third place, or do you think I'm crazy for even considering England in this competition with Belgium?
No, well, look, I mean, it's a third place game, so kind of all bets are off. Like, how do you even handicap a third place game when, you know, both these teams come in just crushed after losing a semifinal? And, you know, I think, you know, it's going to be kind of down to which one of these coaches can motivate their players the most. I mean, that's really what it is. Belgium's a better team. Belgium has more talent. Belgium could conceivably, on their best day, drop four on England.
Yeah.
I don't know if they have that energy level now. I don't know if going into a third place match and you're really just playing for pride if you're there. I mean, at the same time, there's no reason to play conservative. There's no reason to sit back and just wait for things to happen. Might as well go for it now, which means it could be fun. We could end up with something like a 4-3. I would pick Belgium, Lyndon. I wouldn't be riding England for that one, because I think Belgium's got, you know, that incredible talent. Hazard could pop up and score three. But this could be fun. Yeah, man. I'm going to watch the game. I'm not going to cash out on the World Cup on Saturday just because that game doesn't have a trophy attached to it.
100%. And it's going to be good soccer. And if you enjoyed the World Cup thus far, that's going to be a great game to watch. You get to finish out watching Eden Hazard versus Harry Kane. So you soccer fans win no matter what. And now for the golden question, who do you think ends up as the winner of this World Cup?
I'm going with France. I picked them to start the tournament. I thought that attacking talent would push them through, and so I've been interested to see how they've sort of resolved into the team that they are. I mean, I always knew, we knew that Deschamps wasn't necessarily the most adventurous coach to begin with. But I still thought that Mbappe and Griezmann would have a bigger impact on everything. I'm sticking with them because I picked them. I think they're the better team here. I think N'Golo Kanté is fantastic, and as great as Luka Modric is, the pieces around Kanté are better to allow him and his team to go win this title. And I think it's going to be tight. I could conceivably see this going to extra time and penalties, but I think 2-1 France sounds about right to me.
100%. Thank you so much, Jason. I'd be an idiot not to ask you this question because I know this is our sports show, but on our main show, we talk a lot of music. And I saw in your Twitter bio, it said you're a big, avid hip-hop fan.
I am.
And we have a lot of hip-hop fans that listen to this podcast. Give us some of your favorite hip-hop artists real quick before you go.
Look, I'm admittedly an old guy at this point, so we got to go back, you know, 90s for my heyday. You know, I'm a big Biggie guy. Pretty much anything out of New York in the 90s is stuff I was listening to. These days, I've always dig what Kanye does, but you know, I'm just thinking about some of the stuff that's dropped recently that I made a joke, I tried to make it through all 25 songs or whatever it is on the double thing that Drake just put down, and it was like, I got no time for this. I got the World Cup going on. Give this any attention. Look, man, I'm just kind of all over the place these days. My wheelhouse is sort of 90s, 2000s. But I used to be big into some backpack stuff as well. So it goes all over the place. Like Quantum, stuff like that. Some Def Jux is in there. Like it goes
real. That's some deep cuts.
Yeah, it goes all over the place.
That's awesome, Jason, man. Well, plug away. This is part one of our World Cup finals preview. So go ahead, Jason, plug everything so the fans can find to see where you're at on Twitter and listen to your show.
Get a SiriusXM subscription if you don't have one. I highly recommend it. There are lots of options there. I got to be a good company dude and tell you to get the subscription. I'm on 12 to 2 p.m. Eastern time every Monday through Friday with the United States of Soccer. I've kind of been, the schedule's been a little different because of the World Cup, but I'm back at it today. And then, I mean, I know people won't be listening to this until after today's show, but.
Oh, no, this will be out after lunch.
All right, yeah. So, starting with Friday the 13th, check it out. You can hit me up on Twitter at DavisJSN. I got a new project. It's a video thing. It's all soccer. We're going to be sort of extending our coverage. But right now, it's me doing World Cup stuff. It's called Compass Football. You can find it on Twitter, on YouTube, on Facebook. You know, like it and subscribe and all that stuff. There's video content. It's going to ramp up pretty heavily after the World Cup once I kind of get some of the bells and whistles all tweaked up.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Jason. It was awesome to have you. And you guys go follow Jason because he's an awesome follow. If you like soccer, hip hop, he's always tweeting some good stuff. So go follow him and check out all his content. Now, before we get to part two, I'm going to take a little break and tell you where this podcast is provided from. So stick around.
This episode of the Bros Who Think podcast and Prime Time was brought to you by Mama's Fried Chicken in Opelousas, the best fried chicken in Louisiana at 508 East Landry and 2307 Jake Drive. Mama's Fried Chicken, where you can find some of the best fried chicken in Louisiana. They've been operated and owned for more than 35 years locally. They take pride in their homemade menu items better than any other fast food restaurant in the area has to offer. Mama's Fried Chicken. Come and get you the best lemonade, shrimp po' boy, or fried chicken in Louisiana. And look, I can attest, it is some of the best stuff. Shout out to the guys and Mama's. The guys and gals at Mama's who's making some of the best fried chicken this side of the Mason-Dixon line. So thank you so much for sponsoring the Birds Who Think podcast in this episode and bringing to you our World Cup coverage. Now, back to the show.
Hello and welcome back to our World Cup coverage. This episode is brought to you by Mama's Fried Chicken, as you heard in the ad before. But now this is to the second part of our segment. I brought in returning guests. Our guy, Steve Davis. How you doing, Steve?
Doing good. Just starting to get a little sad, man. My month of World Cup is almost done.
Yeah, man. And to say that we talked at the beginning of the World Cup and now that we're finally at the end, it's crazy to see how some of the storylines progress. I mean, I want to just talk about some of the stuff me and you were right on, some of the stuff me and you were wrong on. Germany. What happened, man?
Wait a minute. You didn't tell me you were keeping notes and you're going to bring it all back on me. Oh, man. Germany, what happened? I think, I did some of these other preview shows, so I'm not sure. I think I mentioned it on the show with you, though. I said the danger with Germany is how hungry can you be when you're full?
Yeah.
And I think they were full. And I think it also shows all sports. This is not just World Cup soccer. This is just not just soccer. It's all sports. You've got to have a unified locker room. And we heard right from the get that maybe Germany, maybe they were a little upset. Maybe some parts of the locker room were upset about one player from Manchester City who wasn't taken, and he's a good young player. And maybe some other people, maybe there's a little bit older camp that thought, no, we've got plenty of veterans. We don't need that. We don't need one more young guy. And so I think there was that. I think there was a coach now managing in his third World Cup. Yogi Löw was manager in 2010. Of course, he won it in 2014. And now to bring it back for 2018, in world soccer, that's almost unprecedented. Most World Cup coaches don't last a second cycle, and that's a four-year cycle, much less a third. I think messages got a little stale. And I think once they realized all this, I think they kind of started realizing this through the tournament, too late. Because by then, you don't have it together. You've got to be getting better through the tournament. They weren't getting any better.
Yeah, I think you were absolutely right. And you did say it on our show. You said if they were too hungry, we might see things fall. I mean, look, they thought they were so good that we talked about it. They left Götze home. They left some of the old studs home because they thought they had enough. And whether it was not the right team on the field or just they were too cocky, whatever the case may be, they lost. Now I want to talk to you about the two players. Me and you had a conversation, both got out early, Ronaldo and Messi.
Well, it's amazing, what kind of a storyline. There's the big three for this World Cup, Ronaldo, Messi, and Neymar. And in the end, Messi and I guess none of them really covered themselves in glory. Neymar did have his moments. Messi had his moments, not nearly enough of them. And I think Ronaldo was the one that would come out probably looking the best. But in the end, none of them could be that talismanic figure that drove their country through the tough spots. It is definitely going to impact all of their legacies, most notably Leo Messi. I think he's the best player individually. Talent-wise, he's the best soccer player of my that I've ever personally seen. I wasn't old enough to have witnessed Pelé back in his, heyday. But I think Leo Messi is the best player I have ever seen play, right? But 100%. was he in the end that inspirational figure who could raise everything around him? I think he was so good that he got a very flawed country, a very flawed soccer team, that is, into the World Cup. He wasn't good enough to then raise that country's level. Now, does that affect how I think of him as an individual player? No, I think he's still the best player I've ever seen. But to his overall legacy, he is not, at the end of the day, going to be seen as Pelé. He's not going to be seen as Diego Maradona. He's going to be seen as one of these guys in that second tier of greats, I'm afraid, along with the guy, if your audience knows, a guy like Johan Cruyff. Played in the 70s and into the 80s with some great Dutch teams, but never got his team. Played in one World Cup final, didn't get to play the next time they were in a World Cup final. So anyway, I think Messi at the end of the day might be seen more like that than he will be about Maradona and Pelé.
100%. And I'm going to wait to talk to Cristiano. Talk with you about Cristiano at the end because I want to talk about Juventus.
Okay.
We'll get to that at the end.
Yep.
Now I want to talk about Brazil. Man, what happened to Brazil? We see the Neymar flopping videos all over Twitter. There's challenges. I mean, Brazil kind of was a laughing stock this World Cup as well. What happened to them?
I think Brazil was still a very good team. I think there's a danger when a player like Neymar creates too much noise, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does.
I think he is a fabulously talented player who didn't find the right balance between understanding that he was there as part of a team and understanding, it's okay to be about your brand. I'm not a guy who thinks it's bad for these athletes. They can do whatever they want. They can build their personal brand. I think it's okay. But at a World Cup, it happens once every 4 years. You've got to be part of the team And that means, you know, whatever that means within your group, you need to fit in as part of the team. You know, we heard back in the day that, you know, some of these England teams with David Beckham, David Beckham created so much noise around himself that they had to create special security rules that all the players would then have to follow. And then what you'd have is kind of this unhappy camp because they were, you know, there were too many players that they couldn't go down the street to get an ice cream cone without security. And it was all about David Beckham. So now we go back to Neymar. Now, was all that noise just when you're dealing with small margins, was that too much maybe for the team to overcome in tight matches? And I think maybe that was it. And, you know, as far as Neymar and the diving and stuff, I think what general audiences, and I think your audience probably, correct me if I'm wrong, probably more of a general sports audience.
Yeah.
What I don't think that they understand is sometimes we want to equate the diving thing with make it a masculinity thing. It's not really that. It's gaming the game. That's all it is. It's gaming the system. It's embellishment. If soccer is a game. If you're in football and you're trying to run down the field, you're running powerfully. You're running low. If you're in soccer, you're literally trying to balance yourself on one leg so you can do something with the other leg, and you're moving at speed. It doesn't take much, you know. If you and I are running beside each other right now, and you're trying to control a soccer ball, I can put my hand up on your shoulder and I give you a little push, and it's going to knock you over. Because you're not running low and powerfully, right? Now, if I do it smart, I just do it enough to unbalance you so you can't do what you want with the ball. And then now I've done my job as a defender. Now, the referee is not going to call that. So what happens is players embellish that. They go ahead and go down. They take the fall because they know, okay, he's just fouled me. Referee's not going to call it, but I have to show the referee. I have to make sure the referee sees it. I have to make sure everybody sees it so the referee then will call it. Well, okay, that's usual embellishment, and that's gaming the game, right? Neymar takes it to another level, and he took it to another level. And what other coaches have told me is, and again, I'll use the same word, noise. Like, you can't be noisy about it. You can't antagonize the referee to the point where he says, screw you, I'm not calling that. You're obviously trying to fool me here. Now, if he says, okay, you're just calling attention to the foul, so I see it, okay, I'll give you that one. But the referees are human. You try to make them look bad. You roll around on the field. There's an incident literally where we saw the Mexican player step on Neymar's ankle on purpose because he's so frustrated with Neymar. I think it was Miguel Layun for Mexico. And the world sees it. The world literally sees it on camera. VAR sees it. And I think everybody's so fed up with Neymar at that point, and it's become so counteractive at that point to his team and to himself that they just say, no, we're not giving that one to him. And I think when you get there, that helps explain what happened to Brazil.
100%. I mean, when your star when the star commands so much attention and he's causing negative attention to come the way, you can't get the team can't regroup and collect around that. Even though Brazil's a very talented team, it's not the team of old. This was more Neymar's team, you know.
Absolutely, and if it's going to be Neymar's team, fair enough. And we all know it was Cristiano Ronaldo's team and it was Leo Messi's team. Great, that's fine. But you got to be the right guy to take that responsibility. I take you to the first game when Neymar scores literally an insurance goal in a match they were going to win. They're up 1-0. He scores a very late insurance goal. And afterwards, he breaks down on the field and he cries. And I remember that moment and I'm thinking, is this guy here for himself? Is he, you know, every other team, if they win that game, opening game of the World Cup, a special team like Brazil expected to go through, would any individual player make that moment all about himself? Oh, I scored a goal. I'm so happy. I'm so relieved that all this pressure on me. I mean, I get it. There's a lot of pressure on him. But everybody else would have said, okay, that's the insurance goal. We've won the first game. That's what we're supposed to do. We're talking about the second game now. But that moment showed me so much about where his mind was at this World Cup. First game, insurance goal. It's not like he scored a dramatic game winner. And I'm looking at him saying, I don't think his mind is in the right place. Certainly not to be that tough leader a team needs to take you through a tough tournament.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that. That's great that you pointed that out, because if you look at the other stars or even the other just the players who've gotten to the finals, I mean, even Harry Kane getting to the third place game, his mind was focused on the game. It was about his team. It was about everything else, all these other players. And you don't see them crying in game one after scoring a goal. I think that's a very interesting point about Neymar. Well, moving forward, Steve, we want to get into what happened over the weekend. What happened over this past week with the semifinal games before the finals? We got Croatia versus England, and we got Belgium versus France. Let's start with Croatia, England. What do you think, Steve? What happened to the three Lions? We thought football was coming home. Is England have a lot to look forward to, or is this storyline more about the golden generation moving forward with Luka Modric and Mandzukic?
I think it can be both. I will caution that England has a very young team, but it doesn't necessarily happen that young team then coalesces 4 years older, 4 years wiser later. It did sort of with Belgium a little bit, although, you know, they hit their ceiling. But they went around further than they did in 2014. With England, I just think it shows what happens. In England, the joke in soccer for your audience is that every World Cup comes around and they are historically overrated. This is a team that, as far as World Cups, over the last 20, 25 years, really 30 years, hasn't done a whole lot more at World Cups than the United States. Okay, so you understand. Over the last 20, 25 years, they have not done much more in the United States of the World Cup, and yet habitually they are one of the favorites going in. And it's because, you know, we hear so much about English soccer, and so much of the press comes out of England, and it is the home, you know, kind of the sort of the fabled home of the game, whatever. This time around, what happens is nobody says that about England. It's a younger team. They don't have a lot of stars. It's actually a team. They're not going through. It's not a bunch of guys gathered around two or three big older stars like David Beckham or Frank Lampard, or, you know, the John Terry, Steven Gerrard, like that. And that's what's happened to some of these other groups. They've come in basically as a group of guys trying to coalesce around an age, around a brand, really, honestly, around a brand in the case of Beckham. So this time it's a group of younger players. They just kind of go in without expectations. And now we see what happens when a good group that fights for each other. It's a young man's tournament, because as you start stacking these games, you know, the games get closer together, and it's a hard physical grind. And we see what happens when a team like this comes together, young players around a system, not around a couple of aging stars. And I think what happened in the end was they just kind of hit their ceiling. I think for this team, for this group of players that we look at, and like, yeah, you know, they're good players, but aside from a couple of them, you know, Harry Kane, of course, and a couple of others, you know, they're good players. Maybe they're not that world class. You know, they didn't have a Luka Modric. They didn't have a Cristiano Ronaldo. So I think they just kind of hit their ceiling. And also when it came down to it, when it got tight, they did have a young team, and they didn't have maybe that last little bit of wisdom. That they didn't have that one older guy or two older guys on the field who could kind of keep them together in a tough time, because tactically they kind of fell apart.
Yeah.
So, long story short, I think they just hit their ceiling, and a good tournament for them, though.
100%. And I, like you said, they've always been overrated. They've had to look at the Beckhams, the Wayne Rooneys, the Frank Lampards, but they had a team to rally around. And yes, this team may not be the same in the next 4 years, but at least England has some foundation to build upon, and at least a culture was made. I want to have a quick question about England. I read in a Yahoo article about how their coach was looking at a lot of basketball plays, a lot of football plays for their set pieces and their out of bounds. I even saw England huddle. They took that from football. And I just want to get your perspective on, is that something that we see other teams start to utilize, other coaches? Because if you notice, when they did the corner kicks, that was just a simple basketball out of bounds play, the stack. They were setting back screens and back picks, and you would see literally that play, that one of their corners I ran in high school basketball. So I wanted to know if this was something that you will see more of, or do you think this is something that was just unique for this England team?
I don't think it was unique for so I have two quick answers. It wasn't unique in soccer, but it was unique for this England team. I think I always say that English soccer is a lot like American baseball, and that it's not progressive. They're afraid to take English soccer for a long time, and soccer in some parts of the world, they've been afraid to modernize their approaches, if that makes sense. Baseball, you know how some baseball clubs are great with using the new analytics, right? And some of them, but some managers are just hard-headed. You know, I don't use all that fancy math stuff. We've been doing the game for the right way for a long time. You know how that goes in baseball?
Yeah, English, they've been doing the game for 30 years. They're going to stay that way.
Yeah, English soccer is has been the same way. You know, oh, no, we don't need all these modern approaches. We, believe me, you know, it's the old, believe me, Sonny, we know what we're doing here. Go away with all of your fancy new stuff. Gareth Southgate, the new manager, younger, different generation. He was the one that said, hey, we are going to pay attention to this stuff. We're not going to, for instance, I didn't know that he watched basketball, or other, but it doesn't surprise me. He's not the first coach to do it. He's not the first coach to try to take something from another sport, translate it to his sport. I think that's fantastic. I think you're a fool if you don't do things like that. You know, English, the other joke about England is they always get eliminated in penalty kicks. In the World Cup or in the European Championships. Well, most English managers previously, they took this attitude that penalty kicks are a lottery. You know, if you get there, yeah, who knows what's going to happen? Gareth Southgate didn't say that. He said, no, you can study takers. You can study approaches. You can study different. If you divide the goal into nine areas, you know, three across and three down, we can see what's more likely to make, what's more likely to miss, where a left footer is more likely to go. You can actually, you can game it a little bit so that even if you're giving yourself, previously managers would say it's 50-50. Gareth Southgate took the approach, if we can study enough to where we can make it, you know, 45 to 55, 40-60, you know, in our favor, we're doing that. That's what previous English managers didn't do. That's what he was modern enough to do.
100%, and I think it's amazing to see some of the stuff he implemented. Just the article on Yahoo really just opened my eyes to the idea of how he took the wide receiver bunch formation in football and looked how they would have like one linebacker and one guard, one cornerback on one, and it would be a mismatch. And he kind of used that idea for set plays and things. I thought that was just very interesting. And I want to move on to now talk a little bit about Croatia. Looking forward to the finals with France. What are some of the things that you've seen through Croatia in this tournament, besides the Luka Modric, besides the Rakitic, where you can say that's their full strength, or is that their main strength because they have such a good midfield that would make them great?
So somewhere in between, because I think what some really good teams do is recognize their special talents and then figure out what is the system and who are the personnel we can put around them to get the most out of these players. If you take a team like Germany or a team like Brazil, they've got so many good players that they now that you're trying to shoehorn all of them in there because the manager has his pressure, well, if I don't use all these good players, somebody's going to see a good player on the bench and I'm going to get heat for that. But with a team like Croatia, they understand they've got one of the best midfields in Rakitic and Luka Modric. They've got one of the best midfields. They've got a big target up front in Mandzukic. Still a little bit underrated in terms of what he can do. Now, everybody else, complementary parts. Now, while you do that, you also make sure that these guys, Rakitic, Modric, they're not trying to do too many things that they can't do. Use the complementary parts. In other words, everybody's got a role in this team. Everybody knows what they can do, what they can't do, and what they can do, what they do best. So a good manager takes individual players, gives them a role, and says, now, don't try to do this or that because that's not your game. You can do this. That's what you're good at. Do that. Let Luka and Ivan Rakitic, let them do the other stuff. You do what you need to do, and we'll keep going in this tournament. And the other thing is, I'll take you back to Germany. After I watched their second game, I said, you know what they look to me? They look comfortable. Comfortable doesn't do it in the World Cup. I said after the second game, they look like they want to be too cool about it all, and they're going to cool themselves out of the World Cup. You take a team like Croatia, they're super committed to every moment. They're super dug in. It only take in a World Cup, the margins are so small. We saw it yesterday. One moment near the end, English defenders turn off for just a second, and I mean a second. Ball gets cleared out, but it's not a very good clearance. Comes right back in. Well, the English players have turned off just a little bit. Well, the Croatian players hadn't. They're ready to pounce on that second ball as it comes back in. That's where Mandzukic gets the goal that puts them in the World Cup. So a team like Croatia, there's just a certain amount of grinding, too. They just keep grinding, and you don't stop grinding for a second. If you stop grinding for a second, look what happened to England.
100%. And I think something that you said is very interesting. Their stars don't do too much. They play their role. I was wondering last night, why isn't Luka Modric or Rakitic doing a little more? Why are they being a little more aggressive? Mm-hmm. But they stayed in the game flow. They trusted their plan. They stayed mm-hmm. true to their game plan. And in the end, they ended up winning. And I think that's something that'll, if they can keep that composure, that'll make for a better game against a team like France. Nobody got out of control, and mm-hmm. everybody stayed true. Even though England scored very early, they managed to keep it and like you said, grind out a win.
So I won't take you too much in the weeds tactically to what Croatia was doing. But when you say Luka Modric wasn't doing a lot, I kind of get it. You know, he wasn't, you know, driving into the penalty area as often as maybe you'd like him to be. What he was doing, he was controlling the midfield, controlling the game in a way that they wanted to, in terms of how they wanted to kind of pin England's fullbacks back with some side-to-side movement. And it works fine on paper, right? When you and I could draw it up, hey, we're going to pin these England fullbacks back. Then we're going to find areas a little bit in front of the fullbacks to cross the ball. That's how they basically got both their goals. You need a player who's good enough, skilled enough, consistent enough to do that, to then take our game plan, what you and I could have drawn up, and said, okay, now, Luka, you've got to stay in these areas, and you've got to be able to switch this ball quick. Not one of those long floating switches. It's got to be a quick switch. You know, 40 yards covers the distance quick. So then we have the space open on the other side. Cross the ball from these areas, and they're going to. By the way, they're going to be marking you. We know they're going to pay special attention. Here's the movement that we want you to do to make sure you're open, so you can get these passes. So that after the game, we're not talking about why didn't Luka Modric ever get the ball. So it didn't look like it, but if you could watch the game and you really kind of watch what he's doing, he did a lot. And he did a lot that a lot of players couldn't do, just in terms of controlling the movement in midfield, doing the things his team needed him to do.
The little things. And something I talked about earlier with Jason Davis from SiriusXM, we talked about France's sure. guy doing the little thing, Paul Pogba.
Now, he's had.
Yeah, so let's switch into France's gear. We talked a little bit about Belgium earlier. I want to talk a little bit about France. Tell me what you've seen from France this tournament that you like. Let's get into some of their plus sides and just let's break them down.
So I'll just pat myself on the back a little bit here. After on my radio show at the Soccer Today here in Dallas, I said after France's second game, I said, you know what it looks to me like? Some of these teams may not have a second gear. They may not have a next gear to jump into. I said, France is getting some criticism here, but I'm like, France always to me looks in control. They're not going to go out there. They're the race car that's going to go out, you know, on the qualifying laps, and they're not pushing it too hard on the qualifying laps. They're going to qualify, right? And that's what it looked to me. It looked to me like a team that always could have had a second gear. And then we saw it against Argentina, where they just ran past Argentina with Mbappe. So that was the thing. France always looked like one of the best teams at the World Cup to me. A lot of it was about Paul Pogba and N'Golo Kanté. Pogba has had such a good tournament, and everybody right now is basically having a laugh at his club coach, Jose Mourinho, saying, how can Jose Mourinho make this guy look like a bad player for as long as he had? But not a bad player, but you know, just a player who seemed kind of covered up, who wasn't doing what he could have. Because Jose Mourinho's system is a grinder system. Well, France, what they've done is they've let Pogba run the midfield, and he is doing it absolutely brilliantly. Box to box against Belgium, he didn't get the ball that often. But one of the things he did was he was marking Marwan Fellaini, that big guy, the 6'4 guy with all the hair. Yeah. And Pogba was tracking him into the penalty area, making sure he didn't do what he does, Fellaini things, which is, you know, headers inside the box. So Pogba had a great role and didn't mind doing the defensive work. He's had a great tournament. But I call your attention to the guy right beside him, N'Golo Kanté. He's not a big guy, but he's got, as Paul Pogba says, he's got 15 lungs. And he's a defensive midfielder sitting right in front of the defense, and he's so good, moving all over the field, moving to the right spaces, getting there quick. He just runs and runs and runs, and he covers up defensively. So the Pogba, when he slides back as a second defensive midfielder, he doesn't have to do it all. He doesn't have to do so much work. He can wait and get the, you know, and save some of his energy for the attacking side, because N'Golo Kanté is so, so good at what he does, which is destroying the other team's midfield attack. And being just hopping around in there, clogging passing lanes, jumping the passing lanes, you know, winning the ball after lost possession. And then what does he do with it? Find Pogba. Give it to Paul Pogba.
100%. It sounds like France has one of the most complete teams this tournament has seen. From the striking to the midfield to the defense, they stay in control of the game. So looking at this Croatia-France matchup, I think it's going to come down to the midfield between the Paul Pogbas and the Modrics and the guy you just – in the I'm forgetting his name, but you just said his name, versus Rakitic. I think that's going to be a big deal. Talk to me about the upcoming matchup between Croatia and France. Give me some of your things that you think are going to be big to this game, some of your keys to the matchup, and finish off with who you think is going to win it.
We talked a minute ago about how Croatia, with Ivan Rakitic and Luka Modric, by the way, they played for two great teams, Barcelona and Real Madrid, about how they controlled the midfield against England. Great. Good for them. You know what? Controlling the midfield against France is going to be something different. against N'Golo Kante. He's the guy you're talking about a minute ago. Paul Pogba. Yeah. Matuidi coming in from the left. He does a lot of the work up and down the left side, and just a lot of the work so that, again, like Kante, so that Pogba can be himself. And then even Kylian Mbappe, who's really kind of become one of the young stars of this tournament, dropping back in the midfield from the right side. That's going to be hard to deal with. So France have a lot more to deal with for Croatia than they didn't have as much to deal with England as they will with France. And France, I think, is going to control the midfield. It's going to be close. Croatia is a very good team. But in the end, I think the extra miles, basically at this point, they played a whole extra game because they played three 30-minute extra periods. I think that's going to catch up with them, and I think it's going to be France. Best guess would be 2-0.
100%. And I think that's something interesting that Croatia's legs are going to catch up to them. Playing that full game, it's tiresome. And people thought it was going to happen and catch up with them against England. And France just has so many weapons. Like, for example, we haven't even seen Antoine Griezmann really have his superstar game. Do you think Antoine Griezmann can go off in this final?
I think Griezmann's been good. I don't think he's been great. I think in this game he has to be good. I don't think he has to be great. I don't think he has to go off. I think Mbappe has to be good. He doesn't have to be great. I think Olivier Giroud, who's their central striker, I don't think he has to be great. He has to be good. He has to occupy the central defenders, make them work hard, be a direct outlet. Their center backs, Varane and Umtiti. I think they have to be good. They don't have to be great. In other words, I'm just going all around the line. Hugo Lloris, a great goalkeeper. He has to be good. As long as they're just good, I think they've got – it's such a great collection of players. None of them have to have the game of their lives. If they're all just good and fill their role, I think they'll have enough to get by Croatia.
See, to me, you know what that tells me is France has – you talked about how – Croatia has world-class players like Luka Modric playing for Real and Rakitic is playing for Barcelona. I think that says a lot how maybe France has a little more world-class talent than Croatia, because Croatia, the other only player that I could think of is Mario Mandzukic playing for Juventus. But when you look at France, you got Pogba, you got Griezmann, you got Giroud, you got Varane, you got pretty much everybody on that team is a world-class athlete playing for a superstar team. From whether it's in the Premier League or La Liga, wherever it's at, that team is comprised of more individual stars than Croatia.
Absolutely. And I think that's the way it's going to be. I think that's the extra miles, the extra little bit of class on the field. Now, the one warning before anybody listening starts rushing with fistfuls of cash to Las Vegas to bet France, remember this. Croatia, we all know in every tournaments, all over sports, we see what I will call that effing team. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Croatia might just be that effing team.
Yeah.
They just might be, because they just might have enough belief, and they just might, for this tournament, man, they just might be that team. I don't think so, but they might be.
And I think that's very interesting to say, because it is a look at it, because they have battled the adversity. Like you said, they've been the penalty shootouts. They've just been winning games. Granted, their road has been a little easier with the knockout of Spain, with the knockout of Germany, but that's every team. They've won who was in front of them, and you can't blame them for that. And like you said, it just might be their year, and they're that effing team. So you got France with a dub. Let's just, real quick, third place game. Who do you think is going to win? Obviously, I think it's going to be Belgium, and I'm pretty sure you're guessing Belgium, but do the Three Lions have any chance of pulling out a victory?
Yeah, absolutely, because let me tell you about third-place games. It's all about who brings their given-ness. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, who cares?
You know what? I would say this about bowl games. You know, bowl games, a bowl game, unless one team is just fabulously more talented than the other one, it is all about who cares about that game. And look, and I've seen third-place games through the years. I've seen it. One team that back in 1998, Croatia was in a third-place game. The Dutch were very disappointed that they lost to Brazil in the semifinals. They don't want to be in the third-place game. They want to go home and cry about not being in the final. Croatia, that was I think that was 1998 was their first World Cup. You know, they were carved out of the former Yugoslavia. Pretty new nation, right?
Yeah.
They were proud to be in that third-place game. Who won the third-place game? Croatia,
yeah.
So don't be surprised if the young England team don't look at this and say, "Hey, we're proud to have done what we did. We're going to go in and win it." Now, Belgium, but if everybody plays their B team, Belgium's going to win because their B team is just better than England's B team. But I don't know if that's going to happen.
Yeah, it'll be up to how much Hazard and how much those guys can come together and rally, because, like you said, they expected to be in this final. And this isn't that they're the young team. They were the young team last go around.
Right.
This is them coming back around trying to get it. Because, I mean, company's an old man. Some of those guys are getting upper in age, so this might be their last run together. So we'll see if they can pull through and come together and win it. I want to talk to you, Steve, while we got the chance, because we talked last time, you know my favorite player is Mr. CR7. I want to talk to you about the decision of him going to Juventus. Tell me what you think about it. What do you think it means? How does that outlook Juventus? And do they have a chance to win the Champions Cup versus all these other teams?
Well, yeah, Juventus has been a player in the Champions League for a while, first of all. So, you know, they're the Italian giants right now, and they absolutely have a chance, and they have a better chance with Cristiano Ronaldo. The guy's 33. What else is he going to do at Real Madrid? He's won everything there. They won three Champions Leagues in a row, and that's how they measure success there. And I don't blame him. He's got tax problems back in Spain, so he might be running from them a little bit. and he's following a little bit of the Beckham plan a little bit as he gets a little bit older. He's gonna be more aware of his brand and what is his brand going forward. And if you want to expand your brand a little bit, you take it to you take it to other places, just like Beckham took his to Real Madrid and then temporarily to Italy, and then he took it, of course, to the United States. So the move makes sense to me. It also makes sense to me for Real Madrid because he's 33. And at Real Madrid, at some point, you know, you have to look at him and say, we can't keep building teams around Cristiano Ronaldo. And of course, the pressure is going to be to keep building the team around Cristiano Ronaldo. But at some point, you have to move on. So do we wait until he's 34, 35, and he really can't do it anymore? Maybe he can do it for one more year. But, you know, aren't we just kind of delaying the inevitable here? So for me, it makes a lot of sense. It makes sense for, you know, at Juve, he can come in. He's kind of got to be the new guy. He's not going to expect to be built around right away. He'll fit in a little bit more. He'll play a role. It makes sense for everybody to me.
100%. And let's talk from a soccer standpoint. For Real Madrid going forward, who do they look to build around? Is this now Bale's team? Are they looking for a new star?
You know, it's funny because not too long ago, we weren't even sure if
Bale will stay.
If he was staying, and I think now he's going to look at it and say, yeah, I will stay. Luka Modric is still a big part of that team. You know what? He's 32. So I don't know how much longer they're going to be able to build around him. So I sort of see this as Real Madrid saying, you know, we kind of got to start a new era here. Now, they can certainly do it with Modric and for a little while longer with Gareth Bale. But, you know, this is a little bit of the changing of the guard there.
100%, they're looking for a new identity. And
yes.
We might not see Real boom. Because, I mean, they're going to win for the time being as long as those players are still there, but we might not see another star-studded Real team until they find that next guy.
Yeah, and don't forget, they got a new coach because Zinedine Zidane has stepped down from there as well. They've got the Spain coach that they had to fire 2 days before the World Cup.
It's crazy, just the politics and everything involved. Looking at just covering soccer this past couple months, because I usually watch as a fan, and I watch like the Champions League, La Liga, Premier League. I watch those things occasionally, and that's how I keep up with soccer. But just to get a deep dive looking at the politics, man, it's real political when it comes to soccer. And that was something interesting to see in my time covering it during this World Cup.
Oh, my heavens. At the national level, The politics at some countries, we know nothing like that in this country. The level of political involvement in soccer in some countries, we couldn't even fathom in this country, because we literally don't have anything like it. And then you get to a place like Real Madrid, the big clubs. It's the same way. The closest thing I could associate to it here is that these big college programs, where they have to deal with the politics of the rich alumni, you know?
Yeah, the NCAA and all that.
Well, not the NCAA so much, but you take a place like Alabama, the University of Texas, or how about a place like Notre Dame? Now, they've got a bunch of people who give a lot of money to those schools, who then want to come in and give a lot of money to the athletic departments, who then want to come in and be power brokers in those programs, and they want to have a say in picking the coach. And then if the coach isn't doing what they think...
They got to get them out of there.
Yeah, they want to have a role in getting him out of there, and so they and then they want to have a role in, you know, the new basketball center or whatever. Well, okay, so that's the closest thing I can. And the coach at those levels, man, they have to deal with all that. They have to manage all that alumni mess and the politics. Well, now take it to a national level and think about that at a national soccer level at a country like Brazil or Germany. Well, now where the manager has got all these literally political people who want to have says and have a say in some of this stuff, or have a say in where the team goes to play its next friendly, or have a say in where the team, what stadium they play their next friendly in, or whatever, or what players they pick, because it happens at some level. It's a mess that way.
Yeah, I've seen it, man, and it's crazy. And just I'd love to hear some stories sometime, just some of the stuff you've heard. But looking at what you said, how Cristiano is looking at the David Beckham path, well, he went to Italy for a little bit, and we know where David Beckham went after that, to America. Do you see Cristiano Ronaldo coming to the MLS?
Yes. My question is the shot clock going to get him? Because now he signed, I believe, the deal at Juve, at Juventus, is 4 years. He's going to be 37. Yeah, I think more and more Major League Soccer is a place that – it's good enough that these aging guys can't come in. Some of them have come in. A guy like Andrea Pirlo, a guy like Frank Lampard. They were pretty much an embarrassment when they got here. I guess they weren't awful, but they certainly weren't very good in a league that does have a lot of young players and it can be a little bit more physical. And so the time is kind of coming and going where these older guys can come in and make an impact. And if he does it after 2 years at Juve, he's 35. He does take very good care of himself, as we know. Maybe then he can come in and be a brand and have an impact. If he comes in at 37, he will have an impact in terms of selling seats. But then if he's not very good on the field, you know,
it won't matter.
It's going to be a different story. It's going to be hard to sell him. And I mean, he might, you know, people are going to be saying, we can't have this guy on the field anymore. And it's just going to be a mess, and so I don't know if he can do it at 37, to be honest with you. 35, maybe, so we'll see how long he wants to make his Juventus run.
100%. Final question before we get you out of here, Steve, because we love that we were able to bring you in for this World Cup coverage, and we just love that your soccer insight. Your guy, Lionel Messi, any chance he comes to the MLS?
I don't see that happening. Lionel Messi, he's a quiet figure. He's a guy that likes his comfortable surroundings. He's been at one club his entire career, Barcelona. It will not it won't surprise me if he turns into a Dirk Nowitzki, you know, a guy who just stays entire career one place because he likes it there. He's okay. He's not greedy about it. He doesn't want to. He's not like Beckham or Ronaldo. He's not that concerned with his larger brand. We've seen him in a couple of commercials. And what does he do in these commercials? He basically says one word. You know,
he's playing soccer.
Yeah. He said that one. He's with a commercial with Luis Suarez, and he says complicado. That's all he says. You know. So he's not concerned about all of that. He's not concerned with coming to Hollywood and being a movie star or appearing on magazines covers. He just doesn't care about it. So I think there's a lot more likelihood that Ronaldo ends up in MLS as opposed to Messi.
100%. Well, it's been awesome having you on this podcast, Steve. Actually, I got one final. How's Ibra doing? Just out of curiosity in MLS. I'm a big Ibrahimovic fan. Loved his time in PSG. Thought, man, he didn't really do anything. And now he's come to the U.S. and he's bringing that whole Ibra swag talking. But has the play produced on the field?
Pretty good. He's 36, so he can't do it consistently. But he certainly scored some amazing goals. Right off the bat, he scored an amazing goal. He's been a pretty good ambassador. He's been he's done the things that we knew in terms of saying some things that would, you know, with you know, the whole lion thing, and so he's done fine. LA Galaxy needed something because the second team came in to the LA market with this brand new stadium. They were the new girl. They were the new girl in town, and they were hot. Everybody was looking her way, and they just needed something to get the LA Galaxy to turn back, to make a few heads turn back that way. And remind everybody, oh, the LA Galaxy is the one with all the championships here, and they still got a little appeal too, and they still got a little juice in the game too, and he's done that part.
100%. Well, thank you so much, Steve, man. Tell the people where they can find you at on Twitter. Tell them where they can hear you at on the radio. Tell them where they can find all Steve Davis's content in the world.
Well, they can hear me on your show in 4 years, because I know we're going to do this again.
Oh, 100%, definitely. But
before that... we got a radio show in Dallas, ESPN Soccer Today. You can find it on the podcast. My Twitter handle is SteveDavis90, not because I'm 90 years old. Some people can't figure this out. It's because the game I cover is 90 minutes, SteveDavis90.
I just got that.
Yeah, right. Sometimes people say, you look too old to be born in 1990. I'm like, oh, man, it ain't that. You guys, you kill me. And then I do the color on FC Dallas broadcast, along with Mark Folliwell, who called a bunch of games in the World Cup, man. I'm so proud of my man, Mark Folliwell. He did a great job.
100%. Well, thank you so much, Steve. And like you said, we will definitely have you back 4 years. And maybe get you back whenever FC Dallas is doing a big game. You can come talk about it and get a little more soccer coverage. Because, you know, the soccer's only growing in the U.S., and I'd love to see that sport take off like football and basketball. We can only hope.
All you got to do is holler, man. Now, come on.
100%. Thank you again to Steve. And this has been our World Cup final. This is our last time talking about the World Cup this year. So we'll see you again in 4 years talking about the World Cup. My name is Lyndon Burton. You can follow me at Berlin the Don on Twitter, at Hoodie Season Lynn on Instagram. Follow the Bros You Think, at Bros You Think. And also today, when you guys hear this, we've dropped a new episode of the Bros You Think podcast. Me and Brooklyn talking about the craziest stuff in the world and pop culture and all that. Check that out. And also, if you want some NBA coverage and all the rest of the American sports, Primetime dropped an episode on Monday, so that's out as well. But for Steve Davis, for Jason Davis, my name is Lyndon Burton. Thank you for checking out our World Cup finale preview, and we hope you have a great weekend. Enjoy the World Cup. Be easy. Peace.